Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Today's Monday, July 8th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, and we're going to begin the program with none other than John Bailey, who is the publisher and editor of the White Plains Citizenet Reporter. We haven't spoken to him for a while, so welcome back. Good to have you back, John. I hope you're well. Okay, let's just see. Maybe something happened because I thought we had him on a moment ago. Let's just see what happened. I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. Let's see if we can get him back. All right. I think he's calling back now. Nope. That's not him, that's us. So let's just see if we can get him again. 1 minute. I'm really sorry. I'm not going to go through this again. We'll see what happens. Hopefully he'll be answering. Okay. All right, one more second. I'm sorry because I have to copy this number and enter this. Let's see if he's there.
Good morning.
Good morning. John, I'm glad you're back from vacation.
Right.
And I was very, very much fascinated and taken aback by an article that you posted, which was so appropriate for the 4th of July weekend. And it was about George Washington. It was absolutely brilliant, and I was totally ignorant of George Washington and the manner in which you revealed him. I had no idea he was so brilliant and so learned. I always knew that he was very much so, but I didn't know as early as 16 he was creating a journal, which is something we should try to emulate now. What is it? Almost 300 years later. Where's the civility that he exposed and expressed that we don't have today?
Yes, well, he was a very unique person who was mature beyond his years, but I think that's something that you had to do early back in the 1700s, was mature early.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have too much time for being mollycoddled, and you had to learn skills. And he devised a code of conduct for himself, and he had written a book of etiquette to guide his conduct in matters. And that's what really impressed me, because his behavior was more concerned towards how he affected others and how his behavior affected others. And I thought that is something every leader should think about.
Well, it's interesting because you pointed out in your article that in The American President by Washington, he had put together 110 maxims to guide his conduct in matters. And one of the lines you quoted is, every action done in company ought to be done with a sign of respect to those who are not present. Sleep not when others speak. Sit not when others stand. Speak not when you should hold your peace, walk not when others stop, and let your countenance be pleasant, but in serious matters somewhat grave. Undertake not what you cannot perform, but be careful to keep your promise. And you know, when you use this sort of maxim today, is there anybody in politics that can actually say they've adhered to these sort of concepts, which are not old? We always claim that we abide by this sort of standard, and yet we don't. Where did we go wrong if we started off a nation with this sort of backdrop? This was the platform that we began America. This is America, but I don't see America today.
No.
It's not nostalgia, John. I'm not nostalgic.
Yeah.
Because I don't
think...
You know,
I agree with you. I don't see that kind of America today. And,
but where did we go wrong? When did we lose sight of such thinking and such respect and leadership. This is a thing. We don't have leadership today. There was another quote. We can get to it later if you want.
Yeah.
But the other quote about how he confronted, he didn't shrink away and make believe that nothing was happening. He confronted people who wanted to secede their effort to support the 13 colonies winning independence because they didn't get paid by the, was it, Constitutional Army. And he went to them and said, what's wrong with you guys? Are you going to turn the guns now on us when before you were going to be with us? I mean, it's amazing. What dignitary, what statesman in America can even do that today? They're afraid to even look in the mirror.
That's for sure. They're afraid, and they will not, and they always defend their actions. They are rationalizers of their own behavior.
Mm.
And
absolutely.
This is no more. This is Biden's weakness.
In what way? How do you explain that?
Well, what Biden
that?
Well, his inability to apologize on the spot for misspeaking, but on three months later, and then defend himself for his actions at the time. That means you're really not apologizing. So where is he going to go when a new tremendous issue arises? Is he going to just go along with the crowd? He's a compromise guy and a go-along guy.
Yeah, but you know, John, I think that might be a little bit unfair because in the old days in America, they called that bipartisanship, and that's what people are nostalgic about. But the bipartisanship, if you remember, didn't work. However, what's really fascinating is you can't work with people who don't want to work with you, and that's why America tended to meet somewhere in the middle. It never proved to be valid for one side or the other. Everyone was ticked off even when they made the agreement, and they kept fighting over and over again because they never met in the middle, because it wasn't about dogma. And it isn't about dogma today. It's not the difference between Republican and Democrat or conservative or independent or whatever way you want to look at it. It's all about the money. It's all about the job. It's all about the power. It's about them. It's not about us. And that's the difference. And I can't look, don't get me wrong, Biden's an older guy, and this was the standard then. I dare say, without incriminating anybody, but I can tell you that I wasn't as worldly in my conceptualization 20 years ago or 30 years ago, because those were the standards, and that was take it or leave it. It was take it or leave it, and if you didn't take it, you would not have a job, you would have no capacity to be living even a decent lifestyle, possibly even to get married. There was just no way to do it because you were ostracized. Look at what they do in Yonkers today. Look at how people have to live. Either buckle down or you're finished. And the retribution is unbelievable. You don't do what you're told to do. You don't sit down when they just look at you the wrong way. Then you know what? You're out of a job.
Yes, very, very true.
And you think it's any different in White Plains? I don't think it is.
It's not. In our primary, the challenger, Kat Bresler, was resoundingly defeated, losing by some 600 votes, 400 votes to the or two closest challengers. So her challenge, though fought bitterly by the Democratic Party, was brushed aside by the voters, which always intrigues me because I would rather try someone new than go with yes people.
Well, the thing that's interesting is the Austin documentary series. They're going to be holding a thing until I think it's July 18th, if that's a Thursday. Yeah, mm-hmm. July 18th, I think, is a Thursday. So on that particular day, Bresler is invited to the podium to talk about a film, a movie that's called, let me just see if I can remember it. Oh, the best democracy money can buy. And that's the movie. And that goes to exactly what we're talking about here. So Bresler never got a fair chance. And they, by just simply forcing her to challenge her being pushed out of this situation and having to go to the appellate court to fight a right to be there on the ballot, probably lost her a lot of votes. But mostly a lot of people who may have considered even voting for her probably didn't because they thought there was something wrong. You know, they didn't give her a fair chance, and she didn't have the time of day. If it wasn't for your exposure and interviews of her, I think she would have gotten much less. You know, to be honest with you, I looked at her a second time, and I think I shared this with you in the past, because I knew her when she was in Yonkers, and I think she tried to run for some political office, or maybe she wasn't, but... It didn't go well, and then she moved where she was working. I think she used to work in Yonkers, and then she moved to New York and got a job there. I don't know what the issue is with her, because she's a pleasant enough person. She looks good. She speaks well. So I never understood why
there was such anger. And she doesn't fall asleep during the debates.
That really helps a great deal, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You know, I felt that she could have been a little more informed on the issues, but the others weren't either, and were very journalistic. I mean, it's intriguing to me how the people running for common council talk in generalities and the usual buzzwords that they're for. Affordable housing, they're for this, they're going to protect the neighborhoods, but they have no specific reactions in the debates run by the so-called debates run by the League of Women Voters, throw softball after softball.
Well, that's really very, very compelling what you just said, and I agree with you. But what's interesting is that in today's world, as opposed to even 20 years ago, when you asked the question of politicians running for office, they gave you maybe not as much information as you wanted or required, but they gave you a vision of how to fix something. You may not have agreed with their fix, but at least you knew where they stood. Today, they're vacuous in the terms that they use. It's almost like doublespeak. Like you said, they'll talk about infrastructure. We need to fix our infrastructure. We need to fix our schools. We need to get the right amount of funding. We need to do this and we need to do that. And how do we do any of it? Well, you know, I've got a plan. What's your plan? I'm going to reveal it when I get into office. And then they don't do that either.
that was an approach perfected beautifully by Franklin Delano Roosevelt when he promised everybody a new deal.
That's true. That's actually extremely good. I mean, that was even before Madison Avenue got its act together, right?
Yes.
A new deal.
And,
that was such a catchy phrase.
But he actually did give them a new deal.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Wasn't lying. At least he gave it to them.
No, yes, exactly. No, Franklin Delano Roosevelt virtually can be credited with saving the world for the time being, anyway.
Well, for a while he did, and he did actually, and so whatever. But again, that was a time when the people were easily moved by the patriotism, respect for the military, respect for institutions, respect for the presidency, and so on. Today, everybody's got an opinion, and if you don't agree with them, you're garbage, right?
Right.
And
exactly.
Worse. Usually they don't use garbage, they use four-letter words.
Yes, that's very true. And but nowadays, more than ever, it behooves the American public to pay attention to these debates. Like last week, no one ever asked any of those candidates, from what I understand, the question of how should we treat these children that were entombing in mini concentration camps down on the border. I mean, it's unbelievable. I came back to see the Times Sunday morning, and there it was, this horrible story on the how these children are being treated on the border. And it was particularly compelling to me because I went through the Jewish Museum in Prague, in the old Jewish quarter, the Jewish quarter in Prague. And in that, they showed pictures of the children going to a concentration camp on the second floor with the artwork that the children had done, children who all died in the camps. And the most compelling thing was the little small suitcases they were given those children to take on the trains.
Yeah.
And it just got me. So when I came back and saw that story on Sunday, I said, what is America doing? Who are these inhumans in Washington who are doing this to children?
Yeah, but you know, you know what the problem is with the discussion. I know what the president is doing. I don't agree with it, but I don't also not wholeheartedly disagree with it. There are issues like how do you vet people, but where it goes wrong is he should be able to clean up this mess by getting the adjudicators, the judges, to go through the whole process of vetting. And supposedly 80% of the people who ask for asylum are sent back because they don't comply with whatever the standard is that they set in the United States. There could be maybe some falsehood about it, but so whether it's 80% or whether it should be 50%, I can't make that judgment call. But certainly there are a lot of people who are sent back. But where it goes wrong, of course, is that kids are separated from their parents, and kids are separated from their brothers and sisters, and kids are separated from their grandparents and or guardians, and that's inappropriate. And yet, let's balance this out once and for all. What the hell are the Democrats doing to fix this?
Nothing.
Other than talk a good game, but they haven't done anything, have they?
No, they haven't.
And they have the audacity to say, well, we passed this legislation in the Congress. Well, it don't mean squat,
they never
does
should
it,
have
until
passed
you get
that
agreement from the Senate.
Yes, they were once again cleverly co-opted by Mr. Trump's strategy.
Yeah,
and
rhetoric.
He took advantage of their willingness to compromise to show that they're doing something.
Well, I don't know where they compromised to show that they're doing something, because I see they're doing nothing, and it means it's meaningless. There's even talk that they won't even consider the impeachment, which I don't think anyway is the solution to this issue. The real solution is stop wasting your time impeaching the president, and why don't you just come up with a credible candidate?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the whole point, isn't it?
Yes, but with the Democratic Party is like a snake where the head is eating its tail.
Yeah, true. Well, I'm still waiting for the Democrats to come up with a clear platform. I don't really believe that socialist manners are going to win the hearts and minds of America, because it still hasn't. And socialism is a filthy word in America. So I don't think people are going to move over to the Bernie Sanders of the world. Maybe they'll move over to Kamala Harris or Biden, who's more centrist than some others. But Kamala Harris is doing well, and the women on stage seem to be doing better than before. Maybe they're more believable. The guys haven't done squat for America in a long time.
Well, the women who are running with much more passion than Biden and Sanders. And they're really committed. They're working all the time. They're making appearances. They're saying things that make sense. And there's a freshness about them. I mean, Warren.
There may be a freshness, but again, Warren
but
is extremely
But
Ken,
is that
it
fresh enough? Is it fresh enough? Is it different enough? Is it too radical?
Yeah.
I mean, but at least they're moving along. They've got a year to really figure out what's going to go on during the campaign, and a lot can change in a year.
Well, of course, a lot can change, but in the meantime, they haven't really said all that much. I love the line. Well, gentlemen, nobody really cares to see this food fight. They want to know how to put food on the table. Great line, but you know what?
That was a good line.
Is that her response? Is that her response? Is that a legitimate response? Okay, she's right. There shouldn't be a food fight.
No,
How do you feed your children?
It's a riposte. We need less ripostes, if I'm pronouncing that right, and more specifics.
Well, we don't have that specific.
That's right.
We don't have those.
Specifics are something that politicians are reluctant to talk about.
That's a great word. I like that. Reluctant.
Yes.
No, that's great. Well, it's
they're mindful.
Right.
They're mindful, but reluctant.
Oh, mindful. No, I agree. I agree. Those are all great terms. Great terms.
Yeah.
They're timid as well. They don't want to really push the envelope a little bit too much. God forbid it may come back to haunt them, which it probably will. So very, very compelling. I love this line from George Washington. Gentlemen, you will permit me to put on my spectacles, meaning his glasses, for I have not only grown gray, but almost blind in the service of my country. Do you know anybody in politics today that could say that?
No. But it's...
Neither can I.
No. I mean...
But we still want to wave the American flag. Isn't that great? Is that the best we can do? Just to wave the flag and eat a Frankfurter and go for a baseball game and, and drink down a can of beer or whatever, or a can of soda. I mean, is this the best we got?
It's old stuff.
But it's new. It's new. I mean, I tell you, if George Washington ran and spoke the lingua franca, meaning our language today, he would win based on what he's been saying. And he'd meet our need for nostalgia if there were those that were nostalgic, but he would also be progressive because things moved ahead with him. And he took nothing, literally a scrap heap of garbage, and created a nation. And he did it all on his back.
America's Frederick.
It's unbelievable.
Great. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. Yeah. I'm just blown away by how much I didn't know about this man. I've got to get the book.
Because this for every president. It does this for every president. It makes you know the personal pressures that they endured during the office. And it was a great book, The American President. And it's something every American who considers himself a political aficionado needs to read.
Yeah.
Well,
this is another great line that you put in your article. When he died in the year 1800, 3 years after leaving office in 1797, he was saluted on the floor of Congress as being, quote, this is unbelievable, first in war, first in peace, first in the hearts of his countrymen. I mean, if that doesn't pull your heartstrings, I don't know what does. This man was consummate in every level. You know, I'm sure even the King of England would have said the same thing about him.
Well, the King of England could not understand why he just didn't make himself king.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that was because that's where he came from.
Yes.
That's where
exactly.
The king came from. That's where he sat, and that's all he knew. And that actually goes to what's happening on the American stage now too. You have the people who believed in what happened 50 years ago in America was the way it should be, and we've been espousing that BS all this time while it's decaying and disintegrating before our eyes. And now we are at that point where it's disintegrated. It's no longer it's still continuing to disintegrate, but we have no solutions. And Trump is not necessarily the solution.
Trump, he's only
on one side of the equation. We need equilibrium. We need balance. And I don't see that yet from the Democratic side.
The Democratic Party is trying to preserve the Democratic establishment. And they're being challenged by people who say the establishment has lost vision and are living in the past. This is revolutionary. Remember the French Revolution when the revolutionaries started fighting against each other?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what led to a return to Napoleon.
That's very true.
Yeah. And well, you know what havoc he caused, God.
Yeah. Well, but he landed on the island of Elba, and that's where I think he died. I don't know if he died there. I think he died in some godforsaken island in the Pacific where he's buried. I forgot the name of the place there. But maybe it was a Reunion. I don't remember now. It's been so long ago. I don't remember. It wasn't worthwhile knowing where his burial plot was.
Considering what a horrible person Napoleon was.
Uh-huh.
They never executed him.
No, they never did.
No, because that would mean you can't execute kings or emperors. God forbid.
Uh-huh.
You know, because we have to respect them. But
eventually, and he still has statues after him, right?
Yeah. And of course, I'll never understand why Rudolf Hess was not executed. But.
What are you going to do? Just let him
live out his life, which is more than
he did.
For millions. But
Well, you know what? We just talk. Everybody talks a good game, and there's very little action. Certainly, the anger in America is bubbling and bursting at the seams, and who knows where that'll lead us. But we have to remember too that we begot Donald Trump because of the way things were. And so it wasn't so nostalgic when the Democrats were in charge and they lost to this man. So let's see if they can fix it and bring us back to a place that's a little bit more comfortable for a lot more people. But, you know, you can't also dismiss his base of people who are supportive of him. What, 35% are not the deplorables? What does that mean? Why would you call people who disagree with you deplorable?
Because Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton were snobs.
That's exactly
right. They thought whenever you consider yourself above the people that you are going to lead, you're making a big mistake because people see through that.
And they do. It was a shame. It's a shame, though, because I find both sides of this political divide wanting in such an unbelievable way when we should be investing in America, you know, resuscitating our economy, resuscitating our infrastructure so that we can become competitive before it gets too late. And we're not doing that.
No. You know what?
And if you don't want so many people from outside the country, you know, there used to be a time, I don't know if they ever did in America, but in Europe, when they wanted to have more people, they incentivized women to have children. And they gave them subsidies. Even to this day in Europe, if you have a child, you get a special stipend for the child.
Yes, maybe that's what the white population should do in this country.
Well, if it doesn't necessarily have to be white, it could be of color too. You know, why choose sides, you know? Unfortunately,
absolutely.
I see that we're at the end of the line, John. I'm so glad you're back, and I'm glad you're in good health and your wife
always
and that you had a great time.
Always a pleasure to be back on the level.
Absolutely. I'll speak to you soon. All the best.
Until then.
Bye.
So long, everyone.
Bye. Okay, let's pull in none other than the political analyst extraordinaire. Hello, Michael Edelman. How are you?
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you doing?
Okay, what a pleasure. I mean, I can't believe it. You know, how long has it been since the president has been the president? It's like 2.5 years already, and there's never been one week that is wanting. I mean, it's like starting off Monday with a jolt of coffee, a slap to the face, and a wake-up call. So, you know, it's just amazing where we've come. I don't know if we've come very far, but it seems that it keeps getting worse and worse all the time. What is going on? Is that what it is? It's narcissism that rules the day, and that's where we are, and it won't change until he's either gone or even if he gets reelected, then we'll have another 4 years.
He's not going to get reelected. People are tired of this. You're exhausted. I'm exhausted. It's daily.
Me too.
He can't be criticized. He doesn't fill any of the posts in his government. Even the British ambassador.
That's amazing.
Said he was an idiot. I mean,
when
was the last time that happened?
It didn't. What's actually embarrassing is that it was released, and the Brits are apologizing for it, but they're not saying, well, we refute everything our ambassador said. And basically they say, well, the ambassador needs to be totally expressive of what he sees or what she sees and shares that with the government, which he evidently did. But
that was his opinion, and Trump was dysfunctional, and the administration was dysfunctional, and he sent it back in private cables, and fortunately, we found out what an ally's opinion is of our president.
Yeah, that's very, very frightening. So that it seems that the president has actually. Almost by his own conduct, almost ghettoized himself or sequestered himself in this little bubble, and seems that much of the world is not happy with him. And I don't know why he doesn't find better guidance, because maybe he needs to temper his conduct, but it's not getting much traction.
Yes, but he can't.
He can't because
he's
already committed. He's unable to.
Because he's a narcissist, and that particular personality disorder does not allow for correction. It doesn't allow for self-examination. It doesn't allow for accepting criticism and apologizing or saying you were wrong or doing something differently, because you always think you're right.
That's the problem. Absolutely. Well, when we think about what goes on in government there, sometimes there's an intrusion of, we found out that the FBI and Immigration and Customs Enforcement are now using driver's licenses to come up with facial recognition databases, but they haven't advised anybody of that. Why is that permitted to happen? Should there not have been a legal framework by which this is allowed, or are Americans under the wrong assumption that they think that they have a right to privacy, but privacy rights are being obliterated left and right, everywhere you look. And we probably get more information on the internet than they gather, the FBI and Customs Enforcement, because I'm sure they see our pictures on the websites all over the place, so they know who we are if they want to bother with it, which I guess they do.
Well, I assume that Customs and ICE are looking for illegals. And
yes.
You recall Trump said yesterday and the day before that the raids, quote unquote, would start soon. So I think that what they're trying to do is round up people who are here illegally based on facial recognition of their driver's licenses. But if you're not told when you're signing up for a driver's license that your information is going to be given to ICE, then you're really being misled by the government, and that's another lawsuit.
Yeah. Yeah, probably is. So very interesting. Well, you almost don't know where to turn. There's so much that's going on. Are the Democrats doing a good job in in expressing ideas that are going to have people adhere to their concepts, or are their concepts really quite vacuous? They're too left-leaning, and so they're regarded maybe as the deplorables were regarded by the other side. Now the sides are reversed. Is America in the middle, and both the right and the left are in the extremes?
To a certain extent, yes. But you can't say that of every Democratic candidate.
No, not of everybody. No.
You know, you can say that Elizabeth Warren's proposals are extremely liberal and spend a lot of money, but she's got a plan for everything. Kamala Harris wants reparations for slaves. That's pretty radical.
Yes.
I don't think most people in the country, but on the other hand, Jay Inslee and Joe Biden and Amy Klobuchar and a number of others are basically center-left candidates. And the guy in the White House is a hard right candidate who just the other day invited to the White House a cartoonist who is a known anti-Semite. For a party. So that's what you have to. So the American public is going to have to weigh the guy in the White House who's basically an authoritarian wannabe against whomever the Democrats nominate. And I read today that Tom Steyer is intending to declare his candidacy, even though it's pretty late to do that. He's a billionaire from California who favors impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to declare his candidacy. So, you know, you've got a lot of different people on the Democratic side with different views, and I don't know what's going to happen. My guess is, and the polling indicates, that Joe Biden is far in a way the front runner.
That way.
And it doesn't matter who he puts on the ticket as vice president. It could be somebody who's relatively liberal. But that's not people don't vote for vice president.
No, they vote for president. But that's the other
right.
thing, too. I also read, because I didn't come up with this on my own, it was Jake Tapper of CNN on the State of the Union said that Congressman Justin Amash of Michigan, who just departed the GOP last week, he's considering possibly running as an independent. Now, as an independent, that's a very tough poll. However, what's interesting is he still probably has Republican leanings. Is there room in America, this so-called nation of two-party systems that were supposed to check one another? Is it conceivable that the Republican dogma is not dead? And why is it, like I know locally, for example, we've got people who are Republicans and their families have been Republicans for three generations who are going to switch parties this week. Can you imagine? Somebody who's been from a particular district in Yonkers switching this week. Then we have somebody else who is the son of a Republican leader, and he's switching and becoming a Democrat as well right after the election. So he's going to dupe the public into believing he's going to run, which he's running anyway unopposed. And once he wins as a Republican, he'll switch over and become a Democrat later. What's going on? Is there only one party in this country now? I mean, can we function with one party?
Which is what are you suggesting the one party is, the Republicans or the Democrats?
No, I think it's the one party seems to be the Democrats because there are people who are Republicans are jumping ship and becoming Dems.
But the example that you're giving is in Westchester County, which is 2.5-1 Democrat. And this is not the first time candidates have switched. Linda Jameson was a Republican, switched to the Democratic Party as a judge. Janet DeFiore was a Republican, switched to the Democratic Party to run for district attorney. I advised her to do that, by the way. Nick Spano and Mike Spano were both Republican. Mike was an elected Republican assemblyman. Nick was an elected senator. They're now Democrats.
Right.
So when so when the registration becomes so out of kilter that a Republican cannot win, mathematically cannot win, they switch. They don't switch their views. They're not switching their views. They're simply switching their registration. There's a big difference because the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in Westchester were never really that far ideologically apart. They're both.
It was a Rockefeller party.
Well, so what's the difference? What you call yourself?
Well, but then why do the parties make believe that that's the most important? Because they're slugging it out on the political platform when in reality they're just slugging it out for their own job and it's all about them. It's not even about dogma of any kind.
But there's a difference between what happens in Westchester or Yonkers and what happens nationally.
Right.
Nationally, there's a far bigger divide ideologically between the parties, and that's what's causing the problem. The problem is that both parties, both members of both parties' extremes, are acting tribally, whether it's Donald Trump and the Tea Party and Mitch McConnell, or it's AOC and the Democrats. They represent the farthest points to the left or right of their respective parties. That's not the case in Westchester County. Just different.
Okay, so I understand the difference, and you explained it very well. It's not like a question of numbers. So demographically, we're changing, registrations, and more people are moving to the Democratic side, and so that's an inducement for others also to go there because they figure well. People don't go beyond the party line that they're registered to. So they vote straight down the line because they're all Democrat, all Republican, or whatever. And so, but at the end, it won't matter. You don't think that because they're so close to one another, maybe 1 degree or 2 degrees to the left, or 1 or 2 degrees to the right.
Local races are personality races. They're not issue races normally.
Right. Okay.
So it doesn't make a difference. For example, let me just give you an example locally.
Sure.
When Michael Spano changed registration from Republican to Democrat and ran, the half the Republicans still liked him, and all of the Democrats liked him. Okay. He brought it was an advantage actually for him to switch because he brought along half of his own party. Same thing with Janet DeFiore. You know, maybe some Republicans resented the fact that she was leaving. The tribal Republicans, the ones that, you know, like this woman in New Rochelle who was criticizing George Latimer for the sales tax craze. Debbie, I forget her name. But the point is that when she switched, all the Democrats voted for her and half the Republicans voted for her. So locally, it doesn't make a lot of difference. Now that's different with Justin Amash, who was one of the founders of the Tea Party movement. He acted on principle because he believed after reading the Mueller report that Donald Trump should be impeached. It's clear as day. If you read the report, there's no other conclusion you can come to. And as a result of that. That's a objective determination based on facts and based on reading the report. He could no longer remain in the Republican Party, and good for him. There should be more Republicans who read the Mueller report.
Right. Well, it's a change of direction, but he's not going to die and wither away. So he's going to become probably better known if he runs as an independent, and who knows if that could be a winning platform. But are personalities no longer that important, even on the national stage, or is it because we don't know them all that well, we don't really pay that much attention? But certainly Hillary Clinton was well known, but she was not liked.
That's correct. She was not liked. She had no charisma, and she had a lot of baggage. Her email server was baggage. Her foundation was baggage. Her husband's sexual
baggage.
Harassment of women when he was president was baggage.
Mm-hmm.
Her use of the word deplorables was baggage.
Oh,
she disgusting. So
yeah,
she was tone deaf. But and so
yeah,
personalities matter in a different way on the national stage. It's a question of the way a candidate presents him or herself that matters more than whether you know him and have a beer with him, as you would, for example, in Yonkers.
Right.
Yeah, I know him. Yeah, I grew up with him. Yeah, I went to school with him. Yeah, we see them at dinner. But, you know,
right.
then you watch Pete Buttigieg on stage and say, well, this guy's really a brilliant guy. That's a different kind of charisma. That's charisma from afar. You know, so that's the difference. In other words, so when Donald Trump gets up there, you know, nobody Donald Trump campaigns with wants to would he sit down with to have dinner. But when he gets on the stage, he's a celebrity because he had a television show and, you know, it was The Apprentice. And he made himself look like he was a successful businessman, even though he wasn't. And that's a different kind of charisma. It's I call it charisma from afar, where either you're speaking the way you speak or what you say or your ideological positions or the tone of your voice leads people to follow you. So you could make that statement about Kamala Harris because she's vibrant when she speaks. Beto O'Rourke is not in a different way. He's jumping around. It looks like somebody wound him up. You know, and he may have done well in Texas, but that's because Ted Cruz was extremely unpopular. So, so you got Kamala Harris, who presents herself as a law enforcement prosecutor, who actually speaks well. You know, it's that's different kind of attraction.
Well, the other thing is when we talk about Biden, for example, here's a former vice president. He's a serious contender. He seems to be at the top of the heap of all those running. Very formidable. If even I don't know if anybody else can eclipse him, and nor should they necessarily. But the thing is, are we judging Vice President Biden by rules and standards that were acceptable as the norm? And were we not bipartisan at one time? And bipartisanship didn't mean accommodation. It meant that we accepted some of the riffraff from one side and accepted the riffraff from the other side. And we came up with something that seemed to sell. And we didn't always necessarily evolve that to a better place. But can we just judge people based on the way we conducted our business maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago?
Well, Joe Biden has a 30-year record, or 40-year record,
of
being in public service.
Yeah.
And Kamala Harris tried to use that against him in the debate by suggesting that, you know, he was proud to work with segregationists. He apologized over the weekend for giving any misimpression.
Yeah.
But, yes, a person's record is important. And the longer you're in public service, the more your record bears scrutiny by the electorate. But Joe Biden over the years has been pretty consistent, in my judgment, in terms of coming down on the right side of civil rights issues. Certainly black leaders believe that. People in South Carolina in the black they had a celebration over the weekend. He's leading down there, even though he's got opponents that are black. The black community has confidence that Biden will do the right thing and that he has done the right thing is over his entire career. And you can't just have one debate moment where Kamala Harris confronts him with the fact that he said he worked with Senator Eastland and Strom Thurmond. You can't have the one moment destroy 30 years of history. It doesn't work that way. Although it boosted Kamala Harris. It boosted her not because of the issue. It boosted her because people saw that she could at least stay on the stage with a veteran politician, which means, you know, Donald Trump. she could argue with Donald Trump and take it to him.
Right.
But she won't be she's not going to be the nominee of the party. At this point, it looks like it's Biden. And if Biden puts Harris on as vice president, that's good too.
Yeah. Well, you had suggested that months ago, that would be the dream team. That would be balancing quite a bit. There were the attributes for Vice President Biden and there were attributes for Kamala Harris.
Correct. It would be bringing along a return to civility and moderation.
Yeah.
It would be bringing along the millennials. It would be bringing along women. And it would be bringing along African Americans. So it would be everything that the Democrats would need to enhance turnout. Don't forget, the reason Hillary Clinton lost, and she lost by a teeny tiny count in three states, less than 1%, is because turnout was not good. And that had something to do with Clinton and something to do with Russia. Between the two, they managed to suppress Democratic turnout to the extent where Trump was able to eke out a tiny electoral college win in those three states by winning the popular vote by less than 1%, less than 1%.
Yeah.
So it's not going to take a lot to switch that back the other way.
Well, you've mentioned this before. This goes to another issue. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans is going to hear arguments in a lawsuit backed by the president, and he's seeking to overturn the entire 2010 Affordable Care Act. And is there a credible legal argument that you're aware of that could overcome the ACA? And won't that...
The Supreme Court has already ruled on that ACA, and if it's overturned by a district or a circuit court, it's going to go back to the Supreme Court again, and they're not going to overturn it. The only reason he's doing this is because he promised his base that he would get rid of Obamacare. But guess what? His base is the one that's benefiting from the ACA.
Yes.
They're benefiting from keeping their kids on their policies till they're 26 and covering pre-existing conditions. So this is just a political move. It's not a legal move, and he's going to lose.
So that's where that. But he still has this unbelievable need to somehow dismantle much that happened under President Barack Obama. And what that's part of his psyche?
Yes, it's part of his disease. Anything Obama did, he wants to undo, whether it was right, wrong, or, you know, for example, he withdrew from the TPP, withdrew from the climate change Paris deal. He withdrew from the JCPOA, and now Iran has enriched uranium more than 4.5%, which is a violation of the terms.
Right.
But since we withdrew from the agreement, we can't enforce that provision. So anything Obama did, and you know what? And there's a reason for that, and it's a petty reason. The reason is that Obama embarrassed Donald Trump at a correspondence dinner in 2013 or 14 while he was sitting in the audience, and he's never forgotten it. And he wants to get back at Obama. Every time he opens his mouth, it's about how much better he is than Obama, how many more jobs he created than Obama, how his economy is better, all of which is nonsense because it's not true.
Right.
More jobs were created in 29 months under Obama than under Trump by a million more jobs. So every time he gets the opportunity, he goes after Barack Obama. But Barack Obama, left him a great economy, which he built on, and he's taking credit for, and that's what's killing him. Because he didn't do it.
And then I want to ask you, because time is always running short when I speak to you. It's not your fault. It's probably mine. The question is about the Justice and the Commerce Departments. They didn't permit the 2020 census to go ahead with a citizenship question. And so that was the Supreme Court said, no, we're not even going to look at it. They sent it back down the pipeline to another court. And yet the president still wants to include that question. What's the rationale for putting in that question, and why shouldn't it be?
First of all, the Supreme Court did look at it, and they decided it against Trump. And they said the reason they decided it was because Wilbur Ross lied. Ross lied about the reason for the question. The reason for the question is to diminish the number of Latinos that are counted in order for the districts to be gerrymandered in favor of Republicans. And they lied about that reason.
Well, that's a question I have. If there, let's say, if we find, let's say, an extra 1,000 people in a particular district and they want to accommodate them, since they're not citizens, they may just moved in, or they could be, but they're just not citizens yet. Are they going to gerrymander that based on the population, even if they're not citizens yet? Is that how it works when they count the number of people?
Yeah, it's the number of
people. Oh, I didn't know
it's
that.
Not where they're from. It's the number of people.
I thought they were going to... Okay, so let's say if you have 10,000
people.
Right, so if you got 10,000 and they're all citizens, that's what it is. But if you add another 2,000 more, they count them, even though they're not citizens, that whole district gets gerrymandered now.
And that was the theory that was advanced by that guy who died, I forget his name, who had all of these memos outlining how this citizenship question would work to the advantage of Republicans and the disadvantage of Democrats.
Right.
And he's the one.
That's the other thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. He's the one that suggested to Wilbur Ross that he included. Okay, and then Ross lied about the reason he was including it, saying it had to do with enforcing the Voting Rights Act. It had no such thing. That wasn't why it was included. It was included to help more effectively gerrymander districts.
Okay, which I did not recognize. But one thing I did recognize, at least I think that's something to be worth recognizing, is that if you don't include people who are, or rather if people are afraid to open the door, to even admit that they're there behind an apartment and don't tell you how many people are living there, then those people don't get counted in that census. And those numbers matter to a particular municipality because that's how they get funding. But it doesn't seem that people are talking all that much, because that means you're going to exclude probably people of color who are just new immigrants or not even immigrants yet, certainly not citizens yet, and therefore the community, even like a city like Yonkers, we're going to be shortchanged because we don't tell everybody how many people are living in the city.
That's correct. Don't forget there are plenty of people that are here legally that are not citizens.
Correct. That's that happens all the time. It's been going on for years. That many people just I don't know. Maybe they think they're going home, or they feel comfortable.
No,
they don't feel they need to go there.
Some people are here on work visas. Some people are here on temporary visas. Some people are here on study visas. Some people are waiting to be citizens. They've applied for citizenship and they haven't been sworn in yet. And then you have the dreamers. You have 11 million dreamers in the country, and we're not sending them home soon.
Yeah, and so we need to count them also because where they live, it's required that the allocation, federal funding, needs to be allocated appropriately.
Right.
They say Yonkers, we're supposed to be like a 200,000 people. I've been hearing, I guess it's what people talk about. They say we probably have another 50,000 people living in Yonkers, and nobody knows that they're there. And there are a lot of people,
I don't know about areas.
I don't know about 50,000.
Maybe 10,000.
We'll see. Well, that's quite a bit. Another 5% more than the president.
That's right.
And so funding matters a great deal.
And I was speaking to the mayor of Ossining, Victoria Garrity, I think it was last Friday, and she said they don't count everybody, and that's become a real problem because they need the funding. And also the kids go to the schools, you know, so how do you deal with all of this? So is it just really the marginalized people?
Yep.
And that's all for the gerrymandering for the future. I know there were people, for example, in Yonkers who were promised when they got into office that their district, because they didn't win by very much, their district would be gerrymandered 4 years later, and that's where we're coming to.
Yeah, well, so gerrymandering is legal, and so the Republicans, this Republican consultant who advised on how to gerrymander thought up this question in order to help Republicans. But the point was they lied to the Supreme Court about the motivation.
Right, right. Unbelievable. Well, I'm sure we're going to be entertained the rest of the week. And there'll be more in front of our face, and we'll be ready with you on the show next week. Thanks a million,
okay.
Mike Edelman. What a pleasure! Always a learning experience
for
me.
See you next
week.
Thank
you.
All
the best. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Oh, how wonderful! It's always good just to hear Michael Edelman's perspective because he puts it all in place. Just brilliant, brilliant mind. And the best thing of all about Michael Edelman, that he does know Westchester County in and out, and he was a player. He probably, and I guess, I don't know what they mean by a player, but he was certainly instrumental in a lot of things that went on from the Republican Party, and then, but he's pulled away. He's now, I think, just an independent because he wanted to move away from the Republicanism that exists now because that's not what he signed up for. And there are a lot of other people that are changing their ideas of what is or isn't appropriate. And it's really compelling to think about there does come a time when one believes certain things and they have to reassess if they actually believe what they thought they believed. And the parties, a lot of people say the Republican Party moved from what people thought it was. They say a lot of Democrats are saying the Democrats moved away from what they thought was appropriate. So I guess there is a change. There's a tremendous change in the climate, and so we'll see where all that goes and find out what's what about that. Well, let me just see. Bear with me one split second because I needed to check this out. Yes, here it is. 1 second. This all has to do with... okay, that's great. Okay, this is what we wrote yesterday, and this is all local. And my article was, Richard Thomas must decide whether to resign or continue to fight the legal system, written by me, Hezzy Harris. And it's called the Political Dead End Hezzatorial. And Hezzatorial is a nicety that my readers or the readers of the Yonkers Tribune had afforded me, and they suggested, well, why don't you write a hezzatorial? So that's what it is. It's an editorial with a little spin on it. So prudent prognostication as well as scenarios from sources familiar with the legal system and the travails of present Mount Vernon Mayor Richard Thomas point to either one or a second scenario. The most logical course of action by Mayor Thomas is to resign the office of mayor. The time frame for which he must submit his resignation to the city of Mount Vernon and to the court will need to be expressed no later than Monday, July 8th. It is on July 8th, which is today, that a jury will be selected. It is unlikely that any jury selection will take more than a day or two, but every moment delayed in advising the court of his intent will undermine Thomas's capacity to gain any compassion from the court. And on that basis alone, he must resign. Thomas can only hope that by stepping down from the office of mayor, the court will afford him greater leniency. Now, I didn't put this in, but you need to know this. I had not learned of this until last night after I wrote this. So it's not like I write things, you know, the websites are fluid. But once we write it, it stays. If I find an error in spelling, I may fix the spelling, but that's it. Nothing else changes. Once it's done like it's in a print newspaper. So even though it's virtual, we don't change it. So, but the thing to recognize is that Richard Thomas, and this I hadn't written this down, I'll get to that in a moment. Richard Thomas had to give expression that he was willing to step down, and he needed to do so before the jury pool was going to begin the process of being culled and decided who would or would not serve. So that means it had to take place before 10 o'clock this morning. That's the bottom line, before 10 o'clock this morning. Last night, and again, this is not in the article, but last night, the mayor was delusional, which he has been for quite a while. And maybe it's my prognosis. It's not a psychiatric prognosis, but it seems he deluded himself into believing that somehow or another, the courts would side by him, even though he had admonished people from the New York State Attorney General. He said he wouldn't be able to get a fair shake, and it went on and on and on. It was nauseous. But the thing is that if he didn't approach the court and say to the New York State Attorney General and say, listen, would you give me till the end of December 31, and then I'll step down and not even bother with the election process. I won't run again. He was absolutely deluded when he thought that, because that was what he approached the New York State Attorney General yesterday night. Well, she wasn't going to buy it, or her representative wasn't going to buy it. And by this morning, he had to define himself a little bit more. So I'll read you the definition because I got the emails from a few people now. So this goes on with the editorial. So without a crystal ball, even the Yonkers Tribune, Mount Vernon Tribune cannot foretell future conduct. It does, however, stand to reason that Thomas had only one option, that is, if acceptable to the court, and that is to resign, thereby permitting the people's business to continue forward, such as the process of resuscitating Memorial Field from its decade-long fallow state to grandeur and purpose not forgotten. Thomas's resignation will initiate a chain of events that will unfold and cast people in new roles to which elected officials will rise to a level platform upon which to construct, even resurrect, and eclipse the malcontent and acrimony that has eviscerated Mount Vernon in derogatory degrees. Without Thomas and his supporters' capacity to hold on to their present political reins, governance will elevate Mount Vernon City Council President Andre Wallace for a few months' time, specifically no more than December 31st of 2019. The Mount Vernon Democratic primary elections of June 25 and thereafter certified by the Westchester County Board of Elections with a plurality of 209 votes in favor of Sean Patterson Howard, informs the November 3, 2019 general election that she cannot be eclipsed. Mount Vernon's registered Democrats make up 85% of the voting bloc. Republican, conservative, independents among lesser party registered voters are incapable of eclipsing Democratic designee Sean Patterson Howard for Mount Vernon mayor. I didn't put this in the article. Even when you add all those other parties combined, 15% can nowhere near eclipse 85. So, getting back to the editorial, the new dawn and demeanor will engage Mount Vernonites with an open, respectful, and transparent demeanor long deficient in some past administrations, while hope can sustain desire for a while. From day one, SPH, which stands for Sean Patterson Howard, will need to challenge herself and her team to deliver. One can only wish her success, as the past will soon lay itself to rest. Lest voters believe they have done as much as they can, they must stay involved, engaged, and open to speak truth to power by reaching beyond social media to news media of their choosing to maintain scrutiny over those they have honored with their vote. And Mount Vernon cannot afford to be let down again. It is time for Mount Vernon to thrive. So that was the editorial. Now, we began this. Let me just see if I'm looking through my emails. Okay.
at 10:18 this morning, but you know, as I was talking to John Bailey, and then I was also talking to Michael Edelman. So we got a call from somebody that sent us a note. He said, "Well, looks like he took the deal. He will resign on September 30th, and see attached." And there's an article by the Journal News. When we wrote the article, we were ahead of the Journal News by 5 or 6 hours, and they didn't cover it all in entirety. Anyway, so that was very interesting. So then we have, okay, and then somebody else wrote another. They think that the latest update will be on a news channel, and that's it. Now let me just quickly look and see. Okay, so the update is from the Journal News. So I'm not going to read it while you're on the line. I'm going to read it to you. So they posted this at 10:24 this morning. Again, like I said to you, he had to work out his deal before 10 o'clock, and that's what he did early in the morning, closer to 9 o'clock. So this is what Jonathan Bandler writes on his website, the Journal News. Mount Vernon mayor pleads guilty to misusing campaign funds and agrees to resign, which is what we had said he would do. Mount Vernon Mayor Richard Thomas pleaded guilty today to two misdemeanors in his campaign funds misuse case and agreed to resign September 30. I don't know why they're letting him stay on for so long. That I don't understand, but whatever, September 30. So assuming that all this is correct from the Journal News, because I don't trust them to be telling us what the story is, so we do our own investigation. Anyway, Thomas is pleading guilty to fourth-degree attempted grand larceny and second-degree offering a false statement for filing. If Thomas were convicted of a felony, he would have been forced to step down immediately as mayor. Mayor Thomas, so I don't know why they are allowing him that anyway. So Mayor Thomas acknowledged to State Supreme Court Justice Barry Warhit that he misappropriated $12,900 from his campaign committee in 2015, that he failed to report the receipt of $4,000 from his campaign, and falsely claimed that a $2,500 payment was a reimbursement. The plea deal came as jury selection was to begin into his trial. See, this is what we said. He avoided a felony conviction, but he will lose a $13,000 fine. Oh, he will owe a $13,000 fine. He will avoid probation if he stays out of trouble for a year, but must not seek elective office or take a public service job. He's finished. He was scheduled to go on trial today on charges that he stole campaign money and failed to report other income on city financial disclosures. The plea deal came 2 weeks after Thomas appeared to lose the Democratic primary in his bid for a second term, but he was challenging the 209 vote loss to his former planning commissioner, Sean Patterson Howard, suing the Board of Elections so he can get a court review of voters who were turned away at the polls and affidavit ballots that were counted. Affidavit ballots are votes cast by those who show up at the polls, but their names are not on the voting rolls. So, for more than a year, Thomas has decried a deep state effort by opponents to block his administration from moving Mount Vernon forward and to run him from office. He includes in that group Democratic office holders, party leaders, and even state attorney general's office that is prosecuting him. This is the stupidity and absurdity of his delusion that he would fight the world and think he would win. Thomas ran a strong second in a four-way race despite the cloud of criminal indictment and another investigation that did not lead to additional charges over the past 16 months. He was arrested on March 2018 on grand larceny and false statement charges. He was accused of stealing $12,900 from his campaign, lying on his campaign finance reports, and failing to report on his city financial disclosures more than $83,000 he received from his inaugural committee, companies belonging to campaign advisor Joseph Spezio, and other companies and individuals. The indictment 2 months later added grand larceny counts for each time he took money from the campaign, but was based on the same allegations. The most serious charge Thomas faced was third-degree grand larceny, a felony punishable by up to 7 years in prison.
He was accused of taking a $6,400 payment from friends of Richard Thomas in October of 2015 and a $4,000 payment later that month. In each case, the money was deposited into his personal checking account and the money then used to pay for rent on his house, car, and homeowners insurance and other personal expenses, prosecutors allege. Now, this is not in the article, but the person who now is renting the apartment that that he was in supposedly has been paying Mayor Thomas, but Mayor Thomas has not supposedly presented the money to whoever it is, the actual landowner of the property. So we'll see if that comes out true. Anyway, you never know. They're all at each other's throats. Who knows what they say, if it's real or not real. Anyway, two other felony counts charging Thomas with first-degree offering a false instrument for filing, accused him of making false statements on campaign finance reports in November 2015 and February 2016. The first count refers to the $2,500 campaign payment. The other refers to payments for campaign meals totaling $236 using addresses for two restaurants in Midtown Manhattan, but prosecutors maintained that one of the restaurants was at JFK Airport and the other at the airport in Mexico City, and the payments were for meals when his family went on vacation to Mexico. The least serious charges Thomas faced, two misdemeanor counts of second degree offering a false instrument for filing, referred to his alleged failure to disclose the money he received from Spezia, the Richard Thomas inaugural committee, two companies owned by Thomas's relatives, and three other individuals. According to the Attorney General's office, in September and November of 2015, Spezia used three of his companies to pay $8,063 towards Thomas's personal credit card bills the week after he was sworn in. And Thomas made Spezia a deputy police commissioner, even though the businessman had no law enforcement experience. Money was also allegedly siphoned off for the mayor's personal use from the inaugural committee, which raised more than $180,000 for a gala celebration after Thomas took office. Between January and December of 2016, the committee issued 10 checks totaling more than $45,300 to pay for Thomas's American Express card bill. According to prosecutors, the payments covered the family's Mexico trip, a $2,000 Chanel purse, and other personal expenses. The committee also paid $17,000 in August of 2016 to a pair of companies run by relatives of Thomas. Of that money, $14,000 made its way into Thomas's personal bank account, and $2,000 went to another Thomas relative, according to prosecutors. Thomas did repay the committee $10,000 in April of 2017, but prosecutors contend that was months after the Attorney General's office had subpoenaed the inaugural committee and two Thomas campaign committees, and most of the money Thomas used for the repayment came from two people whose identities have not been publicly disclosed. Thomas also never reported a $6,000 payment that another individual made to cover half the mayor's tuition balance at the Stern School of Business at New York University, where he was getting his master's degree. So that is the story. It was written by Jonathan Bandler, the LoHUD, that's the Journal News, and it was posted this morning at 10:24, and was updated this morning at 10:24. It was initially published last night at 7 o'clock, and we had posted our article in the Yonkers Tribune, in the Yonkers Tribune, as well as the Mount Vernon Tribune. Let me just find that for you. Bear with me a moment. 1 second. 1 minute. Okay, I've got to get to it. Sorry, I've got so many pages open here. Let me just see what time I posted this, because I don't remember. 4:01. So we were at 4:01 in the afternoon is when we published. And that beat the Journal News, who had not contemplated what we had already contemplated, that the deal would be struck. And so we were way ahead of the game. They were just there, though, to witness what transpired under the guidance of the New York State Attorney General. And so good for her for getting it done. I was totally insulted by the fact that here's a black man trying to undermine a black woman, no less, the first woman, a New York State Attorney General, who is as credible as can be. And from what I know of her, and there's nothing to besmirch her, and he had the audacity to even consider it. It's absolutely outrageous. But, hey, you know what? When you're so deluded and you're so disgusted by losing because of your own personal failings, this is what happens, and people get out of whack. It's just insane what happened under his watch. Just absolutely insane. Okay. Let's go back to what else is going on in our world. Bear with me a moment. And let me just move on to the next pages that we have here. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, back to what we were talking about before. Now we're going back to what the president is doing. President Trump is vowing to, quote, start showing, end quote, migrant detention centers to complaining media. So U.S. President Donald Trump yesterday said that migrant detention centers that have come under criticism for overcrowding and poor conditions will be opened to visits by journalists. I'm going to start showing some of these detention centers to the press. I want the press to go in and see them, Trump told reporters in Morristown, New Jersey. We're going to have some of the press go in because they're crowded, and we're the ones who were complaining about their crowding, he added. His comments came after the New York Times and the El Paso Times on Saturday published an article describing a Border Patrol station in Clint, Texas, as filled with hundreds of children wearing filthy clothing and packed into disease-ridden cells, a story Trump called a hoax. Stench of the children's dirty clothing was so strong it spread to the agent's own clothing. People in town would scrunch their noses when they left work. The children cried constantly, the article said. One girl seemed likely enough to try to kill herself that the agents made her sleep on a cot in front of them so they could watch her as they were processing new arrivals. The article echoed a Department of Homeland Security, DHS, watchdog report released last week warning of dangerous overcrowding in multiple detention facilities which hold thousands of migrants seeking to remain in the United States, most of whom are fleeing violence and poverty in the Central American homes that they came from. Democratic lawmakers who also visited detention facilities reported massive crowding in cells with no running water, where children and adults lacked access to needed medicines and were deprived of showers for up to 2 weeks. And Trump had previously expressed little sympathy for migrants in the facilities, saying on Twitter, if illegal immigrants are unhappy with the conditions in the quickly built or refitted detention centers, just tell them not to come, all problems solved. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, he's also known as AMLO, agreed last month to crack down on undocumented migration, deploying thousands and tens of thousands of National Guardsmen to tighten its borders after Trump threatened to impose tariffs. Mexico's National Immigration Authority said last week deportations had jumped by 33% in June, while the DHS said it expects a 25% drop in migrants taken into custody along the U.S.-Mexico border in the same month. Trump's announcement came days after the U.S. president said immigration raids would begin fairly soon, quote unquote. Quote, they'll be starting fairly soon, but I don't call them raids. We're removing people. All of these people who have come in over the years illegally, told reporters at the White House on Friday. Trump, who has made a hardline immigration stance a key issue of his presidency and the 2020 reelection bid, postponed the operation last month after the date was leaked. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, last month said operations would target recently arrived undocumented migrants in a bid to discourage a surge of Central American families at the southwest border. I said in a statement, its focus was arresting people with criminal histories, but any immigrant found in violation of U.S. laws was subject to arrest. And government documents published this week by migrant rights workers or groups showed some past ICE operations resulted in more so-called collateral arrests of undocumented migrants agents happened to find than apprehensions of targeted people. Migrant rights groups say this generalized threat is harmful to communities and the U.S. economy as it forces adults to miss work and children to skip school out of fear they may be picked up and separated. So that is a compelling circumstance. So just unbelievable. Now, let me quickly look at some other things. Bear with me a moment. This is the latest that's coming out of Iran. Evidently, Iran announced it will exceed uranium enrichment cap in the latest breach of the nuclear deal. Iran said on Sunday it was set to breach the uranium enrichment cap set by an endangered nuclear deal within hours as it seeks to press other parties into keeping their side of the bargain. The Islamic Republic also threatened to abandon more commitments unless a solution is found with the remaining parties to the landmark 2015 agreement after Washington unilaterally pulled out. And U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo tweeted on Sunday that Iran would face, quote, further isolation and sanctions, end quote, adding to a raft of biting economic measures imposed by Washington. And President Donald Trump warned that Iran, quote, had better be careful, end quote. The 2015 deal was reached between Iran and six other world powers, Britain, France, China, Germany, the United States, and Russia, and saw Tehran agree to drastically scale down its nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. Washington began reimposing sanctions in August of 2018 and has targeted crucial sectors, including oil exports and the banking system, fueling a deep recession. So even after the U.S. pulled out, experts said that Iran had been complying with the agreement until early this month when it exceeded a limit on its enriched uranium reserves. And Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said that Tehran could further scale back its commitments to the deal. But, quote, all such steps are reversible, end quote, if European partners deliver on their part. Well, the move to start enriching uranium above the agreed maximum production level of 3.67% comes despite opposition from countries backing the nuclear deal. Britain said Iran had, quote, broken the terms, end quote, of the accord, and along with Germany urged Tehran to, quote, stop and reverse all activities inconsistent with its commitments, end quote. Now, President Hassan Rouhani's order to exceed the threshold would be implemented in a few hours, quote, end quote, after the last technical details were sorted. Iran's Atomic Energy Organization spokesman Behruz Kamalvandi had said live on state television. Rouhani initially flagged Tehran's intentions on May 8th, exactly a year from Trump's abandoning the pact. The Iranian president has said the move is in response to a failure by remaining parties to help Tehran work around sanctions already reimposed by the U.S. So that's the story there. Now, let me quickly go back and bear my indulgence. I need to go back to another page to see if we can pick up some more emails that have come in and to see what they said at the courts or maybe relevant to the courts. I'm not quite sure, but we'll find out soon enough. Okay, bear with me a moment here. 1 second. All right, let's see if we've got this written down somewhere. Okay, let's see what we got here. All right, well, this is what we've already told you about what was reported with regard to Richard Thomas and the deal that he worked out with the New York State Attorney General. And okay, let me just see what else is going on. All right, it looks like I think we've caught up. We've
we've sent you the info, we've shared the information with you. One second. All right. Okay, we've done everything at our end, so we'll just have to see what goes on. Let me quickly look to see what's going on our website. Bear with me a moment. Yeah, we've gone over there. We've got over 1,000 people reading the site every half hour at this point. Okay, let me just see one more thing. This just came in. All right, now we read this before. Let me just quickly look. Yep, we've done this before already. So we really caught up with the latest information. I'll look into it further. If it doesn't, if there's nothing more to supplement this information that we shared with you that was written on LoHUD, then there's just no point in writing it afterwards in order to catch up. We gave you the information on the Yonkers Tribune, Mount Vernon Tribune yesterday afternoon, way before anybody even said or even thought that he would work out a plea deal and that it needed to be done, which it did. And now he's worked out an agreement with the courts. And so he'll be on till there till September because they wanted him gone. That means when he steps down in September, the person to succeed him for October and November and December for 3 months will be none other than Andre Wallace, who is presently the Mount Vernon City Council president. And that seems to be a smart move by the court. By allowing Richard Thomas to stay on till September, to the end of September, it permits him to just clean up whatever needs to be cleaned up and probably to still be responsive to the courts on certain issues and certain levels and on certain policy. But it also precludes Andre Wallace, who ran and came in fourth place, from actually trying to own what will take place, and that is the resuscitation, the rejuvenation of Memorial Field under his watch. The Westchester County board, the county executive, will be the one to funnel the money that they've already received in lieu of fixing Memorial Field. And they will begin that process. And probably they will begin the process so that none of this will happen under the watch of Richard Thomas. And when it begins, the process will also not be afforded, for any claim by Andre Wallace. Because if Richard Thomas steps down the end of September, October, one month, October, which just precedes November by less than a week, so there will be not even 5 weeks' time for Andre Wallace to come into office, and all he would probably be able to do is nothing but, do some fine little cleanup on certain issues, probably very, very little, if anything at all. He'll have to set up his administration, which will be worthless and pointless because they won't be able to do anything anyway, even if they pass something. But he will no longer be sitting and presiding as the city council president. I don't know who the new city council president will become while he's gone as mayor, but he will lose his position, therefore, as the city council president. And I wonder if he needs to actually step up and become the mayor, even though the law will permit him to move up to the mayorship. He may choose not to do so because he doesn't want to lose his position as the city council president, because he will be signing his political death warrant, because at the end he'll have less than 5 weeks in time as the mayor of Mount Vernon. He will have to win an election over Sean Patterson Howard in the first week of November, first Tuesday of November. I think it's November 3. And even if he runs as a Republican with 85% of the registration being Democrat, people are going to continue to vote for Sean Patterson Howard. And with the other Democrats not in the mix anymore, she's more likely to get the plurality in unbelievable numbers. I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up getting 85% of the vote at that point. And so that would be Andre Wiles' death warrant. Isn't that amazing? Well, I see we're at 11:34, 11:35 already. I've got so much to do tomorrow. Very interesting day. We're going to be speaking to Robert Keston, a political analyst on the local, hyperlocal scene, particularly on New York State. We're going to talk to him about what's going on, the demeanor, the milieu, the environment that's taking place, and if there are actual positions that are being formulated slowly, but I wonder if they're being formulated so that people will start to be able to grasp at concepts that they can latch on to, and or if it's still too soon, and how much longer it'll take before the Democrats really come up with a plan. What is their vision, and how do they intend to pay for that vision, and is that vision credible? Maybe credible from a cerebral perspective, is it credible from a financial perspective, and we are going to try to validate those different aspects of the divide, which is where the biggest divide seems to be. Question is, we like the concepts, but we don't know how to pay for it. We like the idea, but how is it going to be implemented? What about all the other things that need to be done in this country? Can we afford to do all the things that are being espoused? Maybe it's due time, but maybe we need to plan more time to get there. I don't know. That's a question for the electorate to make a decision upon. So we'll see where that goes. So that's tomorrow. Fantastic day. Really, it will be a great day. I can't wait. So with Robert Keston, as always, brilliant tactician, as well as conceptually progressively minded, but very balanced. And I think you'll just really enjoy him. I can't imagine you wouldn't. Well, he's been, luckily for us, he comes on our website every 2 weeks. All right, so let me go back to our studio screen and wish you a good day, and thank you for being with us. What a pleasure. Goodbye.